We started with the idea that we would put forward a plan that we thought made sense and hope for the best. And I think what has evolved is more than what we had hoped for. It looks like there's a consensus, at least on defense, that stretches through the commission and then beyond the commission into a number of other independent plans that focus on cuts in the range of $100 billion a year.
How can we do this and still protect national security?
Well, what we did in the in our report was we tried to focus on a set of criteria that cordoned off what we considered to be most important. First of all, not touching the requirements for war, and also being sure that there was more than enough to address counterterrorism requirements and nonproliferation requirements. So that was a first step. Then we took a look at weapons that were in the procurement pipeline but that were underperforming or overpriced or not really matched to today's or emerging threats. We took a look at roles and missions and said what's most important here and what's not likely to happen in the future. So we've looked to reduce some of the overmatch between our forces and likely enemies. We looked to reduce some of the investment in counterinsurgency operations of the size and scale of Iraq and Afghanistan once those wars are over. On the presumption, and I think that this is probably true pretty broadly, that people are not eager to go down that path again. We need to find a more effective way to address terrorism. Though the nation remains divided over the value of those wars and their necessity, we don't see anyone actually saying that these provide a good template for how we should deal with these problems in the future. Nobody's eager to do it again.
Yeah, no one's eager to do it again. And as you say, still a lot of question about whether we got what we paid for. Did we get return on investment, to use
right.
the crude business term?
And I would say, with regard to this approach, the answer's got to be no. We've spent well over $1 trillion on these wars. We're probably going to end up spending a lot more. The net result is not going to be stabilization or security, even in just those two countries, which represent a relatively small slice of the world. So we need to find a more cost-effective approach, and one that is focused on our principal concerns, which are two, Al-Qaeda and the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction, and especially the possibility that they may fall into the hands of Al-Qaeda or Al-Qaeda-like groups. That's what principally concerns us. So we need to focus and we need to prioritize.
Even before the election, even midway through the year, Secretary Gates was talking about essentially reducing back-end systems. It's tooth-to-tail question, reducing money spent on back-end systems. So there was money available for frontline systems, for warfighters, essentially. Was that a right step? Did it go far enough?
It certainly was a right step. It did not go far enough. We also, and not just the Sustainable Defense Task Force plan, but also the plan that you find in the Domenici-Rivlin proposal. These are two separate approaches, but we both agreed that the steps that Gates have taken are good. You need to go further. And that's the issue of streamlining, that we can do much more to streamline our armed forces, to reduce the numbers of contractors that are involved, to reduce redundancies, and really to press DOD and for that matter, all agencies of government to find new efficiencies. The problem, with Secretary of Defense Gates' approach is that it wasn't really seen as producing savings that could be counted against deficit reduction. Right? He was looking for savings in one end of Pentagon expenditures to invest it in a different end. And what we did in our plan and what others have done was to identify some of the systems that are on the wish list, on the Pentagon wish list, and said, you know, these are too costly. They really represent the problem with our acquisition system. They're not well adapted to the current environment. They are perhaps beloved by the services that are advocating them, but they are not top priority.
They are also beloved by congressmen who they may employ people in their districts. And that's often one of the challenges.
Absolutely right. That and this is true. We could step out of the defense realm.
Yeah, across government.
With any area of deficit reduction. There's a lot of pain involved in deficit reduction. It really is a process of allocating pain. So whether you're talking about defense, whether you're talking about any other area of government activity, there's going to be opposition to change. What has happened, what is really quite important over the past few months, is a developing consensus that something must be done. And it reaches across the spectrum, and it has generated a lot of practical proposals, not just what the commission developed, but many sets of other proposals from non-governmental organizations. So we've got a lot of good ideas on the table. We have much more momentum than we had had previously. So I think change is coming.
We're talking to Carl Canetta. He's the co-director of the Project on Defense Alternatives and a leader of the Sustainable Defense Task Force. One of the areas where it always has seemed to be that there are savings, and it's true across government, but particularly in DOD, is you mentioned these, you have different agencies doing essentially the same thing. And there's always been this resistance. I'm different. I'm the Air Force. I'm unique. I can't do exactly what the Navy does, what the Army does, et cetera. Do those fall by the wayside as a result of this age of austerity?
Well, I think they have to. I think that the objections will still remain. And I think we wouldn't be honest with ourselves if we were to say that there isn't some truth in what people have been saying, that there are, in fact, differences. And there are substantial difficulties in reducing redundancies. People are going to have to make some significant adjustments. What is different now is greater momentum to do so. We need to bring the budget down. I think we will see that, and it will compel reform. Reform of the type that people talked about during the mid-1990s, a big impulse to streamline at that time, which did not go very far. If you recall back the Commission on Roles and Missions, the result of which was really very modest, and some of the reform measures did go forward. The BRAC reductions of bases went forward. Some efforts were made to contract out services, not entirely successful. But overall, that effort was quite modest. It did not get very far. We are back to square one on that. But with much more momentum behind us.
One of the things that seems different in this point in time than back in the 90s was there seems to be more of almost a idea that we need to focus on what is prior. We don't just cut across the board. We actually make decisions here. We set priorities. And that feels different to me anyway than it did back in the 90s.
Well, I think that's right. That the more serious you are about reductions, the more serious you have to be about setting priorities. Of course, it's easy to say that, and people always do. The key thing here, I think, and it's really the thrust of the commission report, is that caps will be set. And when caps are set, that propels us towards priorities.
Yes.
If you approach it from the other way, find the priorities, then seek the savings, and we'll see what happens. Not much happens is the answer. That really is a lesson of the 90s. What we have now, I think, is really a dollar figure that people are seeking savings over the next 10 years. And that's going to compel change.
Why is this important to do? Why is this important to do at this point in time?
Well, I think one thing we learned in the past few years is that the economic problems that we face, it's not just a question of the debt and the deficit, but it's also a question of the economic vitality of this country, increasing global competition, that this is a national security issue. That if we are talking and thinking in the long term, which is what we have to do, we have to look 20 or 30 years into the future, then we have to ensure that the economic power of this country is available to its military. This really is the goose that lays the silver bullet. The economy must be stable. We need to be able to vie in the economic realm. And the final analysis, that's the source of all of our power. So we are beginning to look further into the future than we have previously. We understand that this, or we better understand that this is a national security concern, and that there is a real problem, a real set of problems in terms of economic competition, financial stability worldwide, and our debt and deficit problem, which may bite us hard in the future. I think what we see are two significant differences in the revised plan put forward by the commissioners. The first one is that they've divided the budget and the caps into two broad categories. One is security, the other is non-security. Previously, they were thinking in terms of defense and non-defense, and thinking that in accord with the current split of discretionary spending, which is about 50-50, that the reductions would apply in those two areas 50-50. Now they've moved to security versus non-security, and security includes not only the National Defense Account, but also Veterans Affairs, Homeland Security, and International Affairs, State Department, and all of our foreign funding. That comprises about two-thirds of the budget. They intend to apply reductions proportionately in those two areas. But what it means is that we may see more contention between state, especially state, and DOD over money. It's not clear who's going to take the hardest hit. One thing that the
never any fights between those two groups anyway. They get along perfectly.
That's right. You know, it's interesting though that Secretary Gates over the past few years has been a proponent of putting more money into state, not taking it out of DOD, but putting more into state, recognizing that we need to ramp up our civilian capacity. Now there's going to be more contention, and if you look at the president's plan looking forward to 2015 and beyond, part of it was to increase the allocations to state more than the allocations to defense. I don't know if that's going to happen. So the idea of rebalancing our security toolbox in favor of ramping up the civilian side, it's unclear what the future of that is. So that's one change. Another major change, which I think is quite important, and I'm surprised that it hasn't registered more in the press and in people's thinking, is that the commissioners have decided to put caps on war spending. That actually takes a step beyond what we in the Sustainable Defense Task Force did. We assumed that the wars would ramp down more or less in line with the president's plan. What the commission has done is it's taken an option from the Congressional Budget Office and said we are going to start by assuming that by 2015 total deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan are going to be down to 60,000, and that is a level of funding that the contingency operations gets without question. If you want to go above that, however, you need to meet a set of criteria, and one important one is that Congress has either got to vote that by a supermajority that you get these additional funds and it gets added to the deficit, or the services have got to find that money from someplace else in their account. And that is a cap. I mean, it's a very serious step, and it's an indication of how serious the commission is in tackling the deficit. So let's just say they've chosen to go where no one has dared go before.
And put it into your crystal ball. How do you see these? The commission wasn't able to come to a super agreement, a super majority agreement, but it still feels like these are going to move forward in some form or fashion.
Yes, I think that's right. The commissioner said the midweek that the era of deficit denial is over. That's maybe a bit optimistic. If it's over, the era of deficit evasion might continue. But what we have seen is a change in our thinking, and it's not just the commission. It's that many of those who were on the commission and also people outside the commission have generated a range of very interesting, very detailed plans. Most important, I think the frame of our thinking has changed. It's not clear what precisely will be done, but I think there's no doubt that something now will happen.